The Indian as Artist. The first in a series of six programs about the traditional arts of British Columbia. On tonight's program, the origin and development of Indian art styles. Tonight we begin a series in which we'll be considering some of the traditional arts of the native peoples of our North Pacific coast: carving, painting, song, dance, and storytelling. In this series, we'll have five Indian artists to assist us: Doug Cranmer, Ramona Morris, Bill Reed, Don Smith, and Henry Speck, and a noted anthropologist, Wilson Duff. For a long time, it was thought that the distinguished and powerful art style of our province had developed quite late. But this view has been discarded as archaeologists have begun to uncover a history of man in British Columbia which goes back thousands of years. Indeed, almost 3,000 years ago, Indians in what is now the Lower Fraser Valley were working in a style which appears to have been one of the ancestors of the classical Northwest style. Wilson Duff, formerly curator of anthropology at the Provincial Museum and now associate professor of anthropology at the University of British Columbia, is one of the experts in this field.
Indian people have been living on or near the BC coast, or at least the southern part of it, for at least 8,000 to 10,000 years, but as yet we know almost nothing about the cultures of the early ones. Even if these ancient Indians had carved totem poles and had made wooden boxes and rattles and masks like the recent coast Indians, we would have almost no way at all of knowing about it, because in our climate, wood disintegrates without a trace in a couple of hundred years. And so, in our attempt to trace the prehistoric development of the art style of the Northwest Coast, we're greatly handicapped by the perishable nature of the materials that were used. But there is one large body of prehistoric sculpture in this area that does give us some inklings of that development, and that's the stone sculpture of the Fraser Valley and Gulf of Georgia. Several hundred old stone carvings have been found over the years along the Fraser up as far as Lillooet and Kamloops and over on Vancouver Island from about Comox to Victoria. The existence of this bonanza of ancient art seems to be the result of two circumstances. One is that the area, especially the Fraser River portion of it, seems to have been a very important center of cultural growth for several thousands of years. The other is that it just happens to be the only part of the whole region where there's a good supply of soft stone suitable for carving. Up along the Fraser, especially around Lytton, the Indians used to find boulders of soapstone, which they either carved or traded downriver to the coast. The presence of this soft gray stone was very important, not only because it permitted the growth of the sculptural art, but also because it was sometimes used for making things that were otherwise made of wood or other perishable material, like spindle whorls or mat creasers or spear thrower weights, and these have survived as part of the archaeological record. These ancient stone carvings have been coming to light and finding their way into our museum collections for about 100 years now. They're found by farmers and road builders, all sorts of people. Unfortunately, very few have been found by trained archaeologists, so that most of the clues to their age and cultural associations have been lost. In most cases, all we know is the general vicinity where the carving was found. Any other information we have to deduce from its form or material or art style. The carvings come in a surprisingly wide variety of forms. There are, for example, large, crude human figures. These are not usually made of soapstone, only the best of the stone carvings are of that material. There's also a great variety of tiny charms and effigies and knick-knacks of unknown use. But mostly, there are various kinds of vessels or bowls. There are simple hollowed-out boulders, either plain or with a surface decoration of animal motifs. There are bowls shaped like animals. Sometimes these are birds, mostly owls. Sometimes they're turtles. And sometimes they're creatures that seem to be both, with four legs, but also bird-like wings and tail. There are bowls shaped like human heads with the hollow in the top. But most characteristic, and apparently the last type to evolve, there are vessels in the shape of human figures, seated or kneeling, looking upward, holding bowls in their laps. The majority of these seated human figure bowls are carved of soapstone, and many of them are beautifully finished, showing fascinating details such as complicated snakeskin headdresses, ribs, shoulder blades, animals on the back. One that I recently saw in Victoria had a very clear portrayal of a rattlesnake on its back. And since both the snake and the soapstone are foreign to Victoria, it had obviously been traded in from the vicinity of Lytton. These figures range in size from about 3 inches to almost 2 feet, but the finest ones tend to be small, say between 6 and 10 inches. And more often than not, these fine small ones come from up the Fraser rather than down on the coast. The present Indians don't seem to know what these things were used for, but there are pretty good indications that they were used by ritualists for fortune-telling and for influencing future events. Now, what this great body of stone sculpture seems to represent is a long local evolution, centering in the Lower Fraser Valley and extending over a very long period of time. It's not something that's borrowed from some other area, and it is not all from a single period in time. Up until a couple of years ago, we thought that its development was encompassed, say, within the last 2,000 years. But now I'm told by my colleague, Dr. Carl Borden, that he's found sculptured objects in his excavations in the Fraser Canyon, which are as much as 4,000 to 5,000 years old. The main question we want to ask of this stone sculpture complex is whether, in some way, it's ancestral to the later Northwest Coast totem pole art style. And the answer seems to be yes, but only partly. For one thing, we can see in it, or we think we can, the development of some of the stylistic features which are characteristic of Northwest Coast art. We see a preference for animal and human motifs as opposed to geometric or other kinds of designs. We see this in the proportions of the human figures, with their very large and carefully carved heads and faces, and the small sort of de-emphasized bodies and arms and legs. But most of all, perhaps, we see it in the evolution of what we call the Northwest Coast eye. This eye motif is the most distinctive single element of Northwest Coast art, and it's seen on everything from totem poles to Chilkat blankets. It has a large, round center or iris, and doubly recurved upper and lower eyelids. And these are carved with sophisticated and very carefully controlled lines. Now, in the stone sculpture, we can trace the development of this eye form from simple dots or circles through all stages to its most highly evolved form. One tiny seated human figure bowl from an ancient grave at Lytton has eyes almost identical in form with those on recent Haida totem poles. Some of the stylistic features of Northwest Coast art, therefore, seem to have developed in this ancient stone sculpture. But it's also important to point out that other distinct elements of Northwest Coast art are not foreshadowed in the old stone carvings. The idea of splitting an animal design into two symmetrical halves and spreading it over the entire design field, and the compulsive decoration of all surfaces with highly stylized design elements, for example, are absent from the older art. For the stimulus for these ideas, we have to look farther afield, perhaps as far as China. The final development of the classic northern Northwest Coast style, that is to say, is more than just a local story. Another intriguing question is whether The people who made the ancient stone carvings also carved in wood, and if they did, what their wood carvings were like. Actually, it'd be strange indeed if they didn't carve wood as well as stone, and one would expect that the wood, being easier to shape, would be better carved. And there are indications that these people were also wood carvers. For one thing, the soapstone boulders are found in the same places as boulders of nephrite or jade, which was the main material used for chisels and adze blades used in wood carving. Also, the soapstone was carved by techniques of cutting and incising like wood, rather than by battering and grinding as with the coarser kinds of stone. So we do think that these ancient people were also accomplished wood sculptors. But this leads us to a bit of a puzzle, because the recent Salish wood carving of this area seems to be inferior to the best of the old stone sculpture. There must have been some sort of a decline in the art of the area since those times. Now, putting all these indications together, what seems to have happened is this. 3,000 years ago, or maybe more, a sculptural style in stone, and probably also in wood, began to evolve in the Fraser Valley area. It was a long local evolution, producing the stone figures and bowls that have survived, and whatever unknown wooden carvings that have long since perished. Some of the basic features of Northwest Coast art style developed here, like the preference for human and animal motifs and the Northwest Coast eye. Then, later, when the center of artistic development had shifted up the coast to the northern tribes, and the art style in this area had declined, new influences were felt, perhaps from China, which were incorporated into the recent northern style. What we don't know is what stimulated the original artistic development, as seen in the stone sculpture, and also what outside influences affected the recent climax of classic northern art. But of one thing we are sure, that some of the roots of the Northwest Coast art style are local, and they are long and deep.
What happened between the end of the culture described by Mr. Duff and the flowering of the culture discovered by explorers and anthropologists in the late 18th and early 19th centuries? A great deal, obviously. Perhaps, as Wilson Duff has suggested, there were influences from Asia. There's no doubt at least about one thing, that the classic Northwest Coast culture produced one of the great minor art styles of the world. It was too limited, certainly, to be compared with the art of the great civilizations of the world, but its formal complexity, richness of allusion, and power of expression have ensured it a permanent place in the history of world art. Here is Bill Reed, a Haida carver.
I'm not saying that this is a great thing that compares with the Renaissance or one of the great schools of European arts. I think as it had its excellencies, it also certainly had its limitations. The limitations were probably reached a great many years ago and didn't proceed beyond this, but it certainly achieved a refinement such as very few other forms of art in the world have. It will exist and be appreciated in collections, in museums, in art galleries. It will take its place and find its true stature as one of the great schools of art in the universal art world. And who knows, perhaps even British Columbians will learn eventually what they had here.
This has been The Indian as Artist, and tonight we have considered the origin and development of Indian art styles. Next week we will consider problems of style as they affect the Indian artist. The Indian as Artist is produced by Norman Newton in the Vancouver studios of the CBC. This is Bert Nelson speaking.